From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. It's been a rough week for the photo sharing service Instagram. If you don't know, it's the IT app for sharing photos by smartphone. Lots of photos in the social media age where people share lots of everyday images from their lives. 100 million people use Instagram. Facebook bought it this year, barely out of the cradle, for $1 billion. On Monday, Instagram updated its terms of service, said they could share your info with Facebook and others, said they could apparently sell your photos to advertisers without you even knowing, make your face, your life, a marketer's sock puppet. There was a big backlash from users, a walk back, sort of, by Instagram, and a fresh reminder here of how naked we can be in the digital age. This hour, On Point, the Instagram uproar and who owns your digital life. You can join the conversation. Did you flip over Instagram's new terms of service this week? Should they own your face, your kid's face, your summer vacation album, your digital life? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from Oakland, California, is Richard Cochi Hernandez, big, big Instagrammer, 160,000-plus followers. Slate dubbed him an Instagram superstar for his cool, moody photos. He's an Emmy Award-winning multimedia journalist who's put a lot of images up on Instagram. Professor of journalism at the University of California, Berkeley, he's co-authored the book The Art of Iphonography. Now he's rethinking the app that he's loved, Instagram. Richard Cochi Hernandez, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Tom.
Can you remind us or tell us what got people so upset this week?
Well, the change in terms of service, which quite frankly I find interesting that people are actually reading the fine print these days.
Right, whoever does that, you just click yes, agree.
Most of the time we just click yes and right. We go on about our day. And it was a very small paragraph that basically said, as you put it, Instagram could take my images, my content, and sell them to a third party, and that third party could use it in advertising. It, for me, it was the second part that came after that that said, the third party that does that wouldn't have to even label it as an ad. And that, for me, was the biggest red flag.
Could you explain, I mean, for people who don't use Instagram, maybe for those who do, how would this work? How would, I mean, if you go on Instagram, or if you're following people there, I mean, you've got sort of beautiful arty stuff, but there's all kinds of stuff. People just, I don't know, here's my breakfast, or, you know, we just stopped at KFC, or how would all these pictures of, you know, family outings and, nighttime escapades be turned into ads or be useful?
You know, I don't know the exact answer, but my suspicion is probably close to what Facebook already does. And now that Facebook owns Instagram, I think this is where we're seeing the influence.
Okay.
You know, if I take a picture of the foam in my latte, you know, at Starbucks and tag it, you know, at Starbucks having my morning Joe.
Right.
You know,
I see the face of Jesus in my foam.
All of a sudden, you know, here comes Starbucks and says, hey, Instagram, we'd like to put that on our feed, et cetera, and, you know, share that with users, says, you know, hey, this popular Instagram user loves Starbucks. I mean, that's a simple scenario.
Okay.
Or someone's, you know, at a bar and they're photographing and they may mention a certain, you know, alcoholic beverage, maybe that alcoholic beverage company.
Or if I go to Vegas and I'm, I don't know, throwing the dice at some casino, that shows up in their ad and I have nothing to say about it. That was what people were concerned about or feared?
Yeah, I think it's a fear. Listen, I think the internet as a group of people, if you will, tends to overreact immediately and often cries wolf about things.
Okay.
And I think initially, you know, that's what happened. I don't think people put a lot of thought into the scenario that you're bringing up. Well, actually, what would happen? And because I think in reality, they were probably looking more for the metadata associated with the images than the images themselves.
That is, where were you at this moment, at this time, when this was taken?
Exactly. And I think that they're trying to mine that information in order to use it in more of a target advertising kind of way, of which I'm not sure, but I think it's a little closer to what Google does. I honestly don't believe that their intent was to start grabbing images immediately and finding ways to monetize them by taking the image of your children and yourself, you know, enjoying a Sunday in the park and, you know, making them part of.
Well, maybe not, but you could read what they put out that way, and I guess a lot of people did if they read it. They've come out since. The co-founder, Kevin Systrom, published a blog post. Not new terms of service yet, as far as I've seen, but he says, to be clear, it is not our intention to sell your photos. We're working on an updated language and the terms to make sure this is clear. So are you mollified, Kochi?
I've always been a cautious optimist, and I will have to say, you know, I certainly did cry wolf with the crowd, if you will.
Yeah.
And it was very upsetting. The language was, believe it or not, in my eyes, fairly clear for a legal document.
Yeah, it seemed pretty straightforward.
Pretty straightforward that they wanted the opportunity, if you will, to do that with your images.
If I may just quote it for our listeners, Coach, the terms that they put out earlier this week said, to help us deliver interesting paid or sponsored content or promotions, you agree that a business or other entity may pay us to display your username, likeness, photos, along with any associated metadata and or actions you take in connection, blah, blah, without any compensation to you. It seemed pretty straightforward there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that a lot of terms of service in apps and online things that we participate in as a culture say the same thing. We just haven't read it before. And, you know, I think this is Instagram's, you know, way of kind of moving up in the world, if you will, you know, on the level of Facebook.
But was this the original message of Instagram? Come in here, put all your intimate photos of your daily life up, and we're going to turn them into ads? Was that their original message?
I can't say that I felt that was their original message. It was basically felt like a little engine that could, a little very simple app that said, hey, share your photos in an easy, simple way. And that's all I heard when I signed up for the app, when I downloaded it and started, you know, sharing images. It wasn't, hey, we want to use your images and sell your images. No, it certainly wasn't that message when they first started.
So where does this leave you? I mean, you're somebody who's turned it into kind of an art. People love the stuff you put up. I would, you know, in a way, you're a professional photographer. And now they're saying, well, thanks. You know, or it seemed they were saying, we're going to use this any way we like. Are you going to stick with it? Are you going to opt out? They basically said, if you don't want this, you've got to be gone.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, this is the way I see it. My bags are packed. I'm at the airport, and I'm deciding, you know, where my destination is. I don't quite know where it is. My next destination will be chosen, you know, wisely, and I'll read the terms of service, and hopefully I'll land in a spot that allows me to keep, you know, a reasonable amount of control over my images. It's the pressure for Instagram to monetize is huge. It's absolutely huge.
I mean, Facebook paid $1 billion for this company. They need a return on that.
They need a return on it. So even if they backtrack a bit, I think that what I fear is what's down the road next year or in the next 3 months or in the next 2 months. And I, as a user, I don't want to have to worry about the constant change of terms of service or the constant attempts of a company to monetize. You know, I want to just create and share and have community. And believe it or not, I'm willing to pay for that.
Well, I mean, that may be the point, right? Because this is a free service. I mean, how much do you expect for a free service?
Yeah, there's no such thing. You know, I think that we all know, in some sense now in this digital age, you know, what do you expect for free? You know, your money back? It's not going to happen. And so, you know, I'm willing to pay. If they had come out and said, listen, you're a power user, or power users are people who want to pay a little extra for their privacy, I would be willing to pony up money to pay for control and, you know, ad-free.
That's you. That's you, Richard. But, you know,
absolutely.
Most people have not proven to be that way. What do you think? Do you think that most people end up trading privacy for free services like this. Hey, you want to put pictures of my kids up on some kind of billboard to go without me even knowing? Go ahead or not?
Yes, people in my stream and on Instagram, as I have still been looking at the conversation, there are a majority of people are like, I think it would be awesome if, you know, X brand, you know, Budweiser put me and my friends.
Really? Here's my girlfriend putting on her socks. Put it up on a Gap ad.
And they're very much like, you should be honored if somebody wants to use your picture in an ad. It means it's better than most images out there.
But people, they put so much up, it's almost as though they were going to own your life, your digital life.
And I think that that's what frightened a lot of people. And listen, we're talking about it today. It's been everywhere. And so it has made, you know, people kind of perked up and they listened. And I love that it's sparking this conversation, because I hope that things will change, or at least people will find a way to create a platform for people like me who, you know, even if we might be a minority, who are willing to pay for particular services. But in some sense, I almost feel like there's no safe place on the internet to share and have public discourse, right? A public space.
No safe place. Oh my gosh, you may be right. Richard Coche Hernandez, Instagram superstar, as Slate calls him, 160,000 followers on Instagram he's put up there in the last year and a half. Now he's got his bags packed at the airport, as he says, ready to take off. Richard, thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about this week's blow-up over privacy and online photos at Instagram. And the big question from the web to apps, who owns your digital life? Let's listen to some of the sounds of reaction. I mean, there has been a lot on this. People use Instagram a lot. They take pictures, many people, all day long. I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm here, I'm there. Here's my friend, my buddy, my child, my girlfriend, boyfriend. They put them up. When this came out and people thought it meant they could slap your photos into any ad, anywhere, anytime, no compensation, nothing you could do about it. Well, here's one Instagram user. The Giro uploaded this YouTube clip on Tuesday on the new terms of service.
Instagram, like, why would you even do this? I feel like if I take a picture of myself, I should hold the copyright on that, and they should not be able to do anything with it. Granted, I took the picture and used their filter and uploaded it to their site, but it's still my picture. I don't understand why you think that you can just take that from me.
Instagram fury. Even The View got into it on Wednesday. ABC's The View, Whoopi Goldberg, Sherry Shepherd, disbelief at the privacy changes they saw as proposed this week by the Facebook-owned photo app Instagram.
What galls me about Facebook, because they bought Instagram, is the fact that you are arrogant enough to think that you would take something that is private, my family pictures, and sell them and make them public to any advertiser you want.
But wait, it's not, that language was not in there that way when I signed up on Instagram.
Absolutely.
You can't take people's stuff and say, I'm taking your stuff,
and
you can't do anything.
Whoopi says you can't take people's stuff. Well, whose stuff is it? Not everybody took it so seriously. Here was another YouTube video uploaded on Tuesday. One Instagram user, Kev on Stage, told his fellow Instagrammers to calm down. The photo company's not interested in using and selling most of the amateur ops on the app, he said.
All the drunk club photos, ain't nobody finna buy that. You look a mess right now. Half the time the photo's blurry, your makeup's all messed up. Don't nobody wanna buy that. Go ahead and keep your Instagram wide open and public and let everybody see it. Guarantee you, you couldn't give that photo away. You couldn't pay somebody to take that photo and put it somewhere. People that are tripping do not need to be tripping. Relax.
Kev on Stage puts his spin on the Instagram uproar. And here's one more in the webisode, the Kevin Show. This was uploaded on Wednesday. Mashable engineer Kevin Jeezy joked that Instagram is more sinister than users once thought.
Instagram, that evil, hated company that wants to take away your rights and undermine your human freedoms. They stand in the way of life, liberty, and the exclusive licensing of grainy photos of duck faces. For those of you who don't know, Instagram, the cruel and sadistic entity that it is, has announced updates to their terms of service, which will take effect on January 16th, 2013. That is, of course, unless their actions hearken the apocalypse and rain destruction upon us all.
Uproar in Instagram land. But it raises some interesting questions. With us right now from Berkeley, Berkeley, California, Alexis Madrigal, senior editor at The Atlantic. He oversees the technology channel there. His latest piece for The Atlantic is headlined, Instagram Explains Itself, Basically Confirms the Fear That I Had. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Alexis, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And with us from Washington, Justin Brookman, director for the Center for Democracy and Technology's Project on Consumer Privacy. Justin Brookman, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
So, Alexis, where does this stand at this point? Has this big change come to pass? Is it up on the rails? Do they own you or not?
We're waiting to see what happens with the walk back, as you mentioned earlier in the show. A big blog post by Kevin Systrom, co-founder of Instagram, tried to basically say those things that we said in the terms of service, we actually meant sort of the opposite of that, or at least not exactly that. So right now, I think a lot of people are waiting. I mean, obviously, the terms of service wouldn't have taken effect until the middle of January.
Mid-January,
anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of people are waiting to see exactly what the revised terms of service look like. I mean, for me, the thing that made this different from some other types of advertisement, so already your likeness, your avatar, mm-hmm. is used by services like Facebook to advertise things to your friends.
Right.
What made this different was saying, we want to use your photos and associated metadata.
Because
that's
really photos, because that's more intimate, more personal, more invasive somehow, or because the...
Yeah, I think so. Also, people think of them as their creations versus just like their name. I think there are two scenarios here mm-hmm. that I find interesting. I mean, one is what Systrom says they're currently planning on doing, which is that if you opt in to follow a brand, they might say, hey, your friend also likes Nike. Maybe you should go buy Nikes.
Okay.
But there's a different and actually technically totally possible scenario where they extract your location data or, like Google already can do with their Street View data, which they use for their maps,
yeah.
they can extract the logos or the locations from where you are just doing machine vision.
So here's Alexis plowing into Hooters or something, and it's up there.
Right, where I didn't explicitly say this is where I'm going. And so I think what's disturbing about it is, of course, you can just say, oh, well, that's not their plan. Instagram's not going to do that, whatever. Like, you know, the YouTube reaction.
Yeah.
You know, your club photo, no one wants
Nobody
that. Nobody
cares.
On the other hand,
big mess. Yep.
Maybe they do want that because your friends care about where you're going, right? Whether or not you look a mess or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, and off it goes. I mean, Justin, I'm looking here. Susan Scafidi, she's Fordham University law school professor there, and she said, it is entirely possible that you and I could find our faces plastered across billboards associated with something you want nothing to do with if Instagram went ahead with these terms of service. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I think that seems really unlikely. First of all, there's two sets of rights here, right? There's the rights of the person who took the picture in the first place,
mm-hmm.
And there's the rights of the person who was photographed.
Mm-hmm.
When you sign up for Instagram, you can probably waive a lot of your own rights in that picture. But the people, who you took the picture of, they have rights too. There are rights of publicity. So if I take a picture of
your friends at the club on Saturday night at 3 a.m,
my friends at the club, but the actor Will Wheaton, who has mm-hmm. a popular Twitter stream, was saying, what if I take a picture of one of my famous friends, wearing Nike shoes, can Nike put his picture up in Times Square? The answer is no. I mean, you have...
Well, it's no? What they put up earlier this week made it seem as though Instagram was... It seemed to a lay reader that they could be saying the answer was yes.
I think they're saying a lot of terms of service say that the photographer is waiving a lot of their rights.
Mm-hmm.
But still, people out in the street who I take a picture of, I can't waive away their rights. I can't take a picture
but
of
But didn't
Michael
they explicitly
Jordan
say, like, your kids, if you photographed your kids, didn't they say something about that could go up or...
Yeah, I mean, they did say that the pictures you take, and I think they were probably talking about your profile picture. Like Alexis mm-hmm. says, on Facebook right now, they will kind of put your profile picture. If you like Starbucks on Facebook, they might, repurpose that and say, hey, Starbucks might pay them, hey, Justin likes Starbucks. I think they're thinking about something kind of similar on Instagram, though we're not really entirely sure.
How do they know if it's even you or somebody else whose picture
yeah, no,
is
that's
up
a,
there?
That's a good point. And they say when you take a profile picture, they say you have to represent that it really is you. And it could be wrong. I could take a picture of you and put it up on my Facebook feed, and then your picture would show up whenever I like something.
I mean, Sam Biddle writes here on Gizmodo, Alexis, says, stop whining about your personal data on Instagram, you little whiny baby.
I think that is a common objection, right? I mean, people say, hey, you know, this is free. You have no right to complain. They say, you know, it'll make for better advertising. Or they say, well, users are ineffective advocates anyway. And, like, if people don't storm out in mass, then therefore this sort of discussion is useless. And I actually disagree with all of those things, obviously. Okay. I mean, I think when we have these privately owned public spaces in which there's no way to adjudicate disputes between users who are paying attention and the corporations that are trying to make money off those users, then we have a problem. And right now, the only way of dealing with that problem is for some set of users to say, hey, this has to stop. And until there are better governance techniques for these types of spaces, which frankly, like basically the entire internet is composed of privately owned public spaces, until we know how to deal with these disputes and have a way of governing, we need to whine. Because imagine if this didn't happen, right?
I mean, they'll take all they can of your private data, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, even if you know that Instagram can't walk back all the way, can't decide, okay, we're not going to make money somehow if they were to come to that decision, you still need to speak up, and we still need to actually like put some effective political pressure. I mean, that's what these things are coming down to.
But I mean, they've got to make money. Facebook paid $1 billion for them. That wasn't an act of charity. Presumably they want some return on that, and Facebook is already mining all kinds of personal information in many, many ways.
Well, I actually don't think people are dumb. I think people are not opposed to monetization in general.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are opposed to the kind of invasive monetization that goes by the name innovative advertising. Right now, a lot of these web companies are like coming up with ways to make the advertisement that they sell more valuable. And the main thing that they have to do that is lots of user data.
Yeah.
And already, I mean, let's say on Facebook right now, you say, like, I'm getting engaged. They have rules already for, like, how people can target people who've said those things.
Boom, you're going to have wedding dress ads and wedding destination wedding ads.
All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And so there's a lot of the nitty-gritty details of how this is going to work that actually matter. So if you take a photo of an engagement ring or yourself at the Shane Company or whatever it is you're doing, is Instagram going to be able to access those things? And that's what a lot of this terms of service battle is about. It's like, could they – what kind of analysis can they do on the photos that you post in order to target advertisements at you?
I mean, can they just pluck all that stuff off and put it up and use your life to market to all kinds of other people? People disturbed about this. National Geographic, you know, is saying it's going to boycott here. The Hacktivist Network, Anonymous, which can get pretty in your face if it chooses to, expressing dismay about this. Alexis Madrigal in Berkeley, Justin Brookman in Washington, please stand by. I want to begin to get our listeners in here. They may be Instagrammers en masse here. Buffalo, New York, Kevin's calling. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. How are you today?
Well, I'm okay. What do you think about all this?
Well, I think one thing I always tell people, I'm a software engineer by trade, is that the one thing you have to remember is that if a service is free, that you are the product that is being sold. That pretty much sums up what Instagram's doing in like a sentence.
Yes.
And if people think that this hasn't been planned for a while, I think they're deceiving themselves a little bit, because this is an expensive service to run, and we're going to have to make money on it somehow.
If it's free, you are the product. So maybe that's the new formula, but does that mean we just strip down, get naked, and hey, whatever you want, Instagram, Facebook, the whole world, you know, forget privacy, I'm yours?
Well, I think that that's what people should think about before they sign up for a service. If they think, hey, the service is free, it sounds great, they have to remember that they're going to have to sell something, and it's going to be you.
Justin, what do you say? This is the price of admission to this new world. Here's our software engineer. He looks out. If it's free, you are the product, and that's just the way it goes. Hey, what do you say, Justin?
I mean, I think you're the product regardless. I mean, lots of paid services use your information and sell information about you. And by and large, I mean, if that's the value proposition, I'm okay with that. But most of the time,
you are.
It's not clear.
I mean, what does that mean? Yeah, how much of you are you willing to be the product? You when you're eating Kentucky Fried Chicken and now you're on a billboard. You when you're tousling your child's hair and now you're in a daycare ad. You when you're smooching with your honey and now you're in a I don't know what kind of ad. Really?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, well, I personally would not do it, but I'm okay letting people make those choices.
But they're going to make the choice for you, aren't they? I mean, if you're on Instagram, you don't get to choose under the, what we...
That's right, but I mean, what we saw here, which was great, I think, from a privacy advocate's perspective, is that people freaked out, right? We had a real pitchfork moment, and Instagram had to walk it back. I mean, the problem is that these value propositions are not clear. I mean, I think people kind of generally get that the web is free, but they get that the advertisements are, you know, are paying for it, kind of like a newspaper advertisements subsidized a lot of the services. You know, they don't get that their data is being collected and used. So that's what needs to be transparent. I mean, the problem here is that, you know, the what Instagram got called out here for, and it's because, you know, they're owned by Facebook, right? I mean, Facebook's had some missteps in the past, so that's why everyone's attention was drawn here.
Sure.
I mean, lots of other services reserve the same rights, and it's just not transparent. People don't get what's going on. You know, if people want to get, like, the privacy invasive app for free and then or pay $5 for it, I'm fine letting them make that choice. Just right now, there's no way to kind of figure out how your data is being used and to make that market decision.
But there's something clarifying, though, about the idea that your intimate, everyday photos would be marketing material suddenly and maybe spread all over the place. It's somehow a little different from the Facebook putting up an ad for wedding dresses when you talk about engagement. It seemed it got to this privacy issue. Mike in Williamsburg, Virginia. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Comments and a question, I guess.
Yeah.
First and foremost, the comment is, I wonder if you paid for this brilliant idea that I have. So I will forward my information to them a little later.
Okay.
The question is, why don't, Mark Zuckerberg can't make any more money. He's been all over the world. He's got plenty of cash. And Instagram is a great tool. Why don't they just create or compensate people for their pictures and create like a almost like a lottery-based idea that, yes, a million people are going to send pictures, but only one is going to be really great.
Yeah.
I'm sure everyone would get involved. It would just create, you know, the kind of advertising that they're looking for.
Well, you might be right, Mike. On the other hand, they're a business. If they don't have to compensate you, why should they? If they can just take it and use it.
We're going to compensate one out of a million. It's like playing the lottery.
Yeah.
You know, there's 170 million chances of one. There's still 169,999,000 tickets that are sold.
So pay somebody. I don't know if that solves all the privacy issues for everybody. But, I mean, Alexis, it raises the issue. This issue. Why not? You know, if they're going to make money off your photos, why not, trickle some money down to all the people who are photos they use?
Right. I mean, I think the problem is just like the basic model of user-generated sites like this is that if they paid anybody anything, it would be very difficult for them to make any money. And I think, you know, that gets to the basic sort of incentive structure of how these places work. I mean, right now, we have this problem where you have the only reason that people don't care about what's happening is because there's this incredible obscurity through complexity. Like right now, if you go to a web page anywhere on the internet, I mean, there are going to be dozens of data collectors who are sort of parsing that visit and trying to find out if you're a valuable user or not. And I think increasingly when you pair that sort of data collection across the open web with like all of the social networks that you're on, you see that like basically you don't have control of your data in any way. And transparency at an individual level is sort of not enough, because what's really difficult is the way that all of these services lock together in order to provide a good portrait of you and use your information to sell both to you and to people like you. And this is sort of that's why this is a collective problem, and it's very difficult to solve. I mean, even if you can deal at the level of the individual service and individual data provider, we need solutions that work better across all these services, and we need things that work better for lots of people.
Maybe people don't care anymore. Maybe it's for all the outcry this week, maybe that's a fraction of the Instagram users. You know, I mean, Rick writes to us on the web, speaking of Mark Zuckerberg, he says, all your business belongs to Zuck. Maybe some people don't care. They're just used to it, Alexis.
I think that's true, although I also think people are getting much more sophisticated about privacy issues. I think one of the reasons we saw an uproar here is that a lot of photographers pay a lot of attention to rights issues.
And they had photos up there. They were using Instagram themselves.
And the reason they're familiar with it is because they have to deal with it whenever they sell photos. And I think the more people deal with these terms of services, the better they'll get at dealing with this kind of issue.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about this week's blow-up over privacy and online photos at Instagram. And the big question from the web to apps, who owns your digital life? Instagram, of course, it's the smartphone app. People are sharing photos all the time. Snap a photo on your smartphone, and Instagram helps you zip it off to all the people on your list, all kinds of folks. And people share lots and lots and lots of images from their lives throughout their days and nights. A lot of people in a tizzy this week over how those might be used. Alexis Madrigal is with us from Berkeley, California today. Senior editor at The Atlantic, oversees the technology channel there. You can link to his essay on all this at our website, onpointradio.org. He also co-founded Longshot, high-speed media magazine, visiting scholar at the University of California, Berkeley's Office for the History of Science and Technology. And Justin Brookman's with us from Washington, director for the Center for Democracy and Technology's Project on Consumer Privacy. Now, Justin, Alexis, we've got lots of course, feedback online here. Isaac says, I can't believe the audacity of these young companies that believe they can do whatever they want. I'm dumping all my photos off Instagram and getting a blog, then linking to my Facebook page. Okay, maybe he'll be right back in the swim. Madeline says, I'm always surprised that people think what they post online anywhere is private. In old school terms, Instagram is a lot like tossing both your photograph and your film into a bar room full of strangers and now acting like you're surprised when some strange drunk has taken your photo home with him. If you want control over your digital life and images, don't put them online anywhere. Justin, what do you say to that advice?
I mean, I think that's a fair point. I mean, I think that once you put information online, especially information you make publicly available, you really can't claw it back. It's actually a big deal in Europe right now that they're trying to pass a law where you have a right to be forgotten. That if there's data about you that you put out or is about you somewhere, you should be able to say, no, I don't want that information about me made available. And in trying to implement that, they're kind of increasingly realizing that it's just not possible. I mean, if I take a picture of myself out drunk one night, if I tweet it, I mean, it can get retweeted, it can get screen captured, it can get linked by Google, it can get cached by Google. I think it's absolutely right that once you put something online, you need to understand, even if you just share it with a few people, right? They can repurpose it as well. You need to understand that you can't reasonably expect it's going to go away forever.
But what does that do to the idea of privacy when so much of life has moved online? I mean, Madeline says you don't want it, share it around, don't put it online. But so much of life is online that you almost have to abstain from living in that case as currently exercised to hang on to privacy. Is that reasonable?
Yeah, I mean, I think you put the limitations on that you can, right? I mean, like in my Facebook profile, I keep it limited to my friends. I recognize that, there's a chance that you can get out there. But, I mean, you need to put these speed bumps out that give you not necessarily a full right to privacy, but you have maybe a right to obscurity, right? That there's a pretty good privacy, pretty good chance it's not going to get out there. I think that's honestly the best we can do. We put on limitations on who we share with, and I think that provides some expectation of privacy in a world where there's just so much information out there.
Photos drive it home. People may be a little more sensitive about their images. Sarah is calling from Southington, Connecticut. Sarah, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I'm just wondering if photos were attached to an advertisement and put on a billboard or what have you, as you've been saying, couldn't that be construed as some sort of slander?
Well, not if you agreed to terms of service that laid that out as their option.
But what if it's not yours? What if, say, my photo is on your page and you put it and it gets put up on a billboard?
I don't know the law well enough, but let's see. Justin, Alexis, what about the question? You end up on a billboard via Instagram you didn't agree to, you don't like it. Is there some kind of legal?
I think it's like Justin was saying earlier. I think the billboard example is interesting, but like highly unlikely because of a lot of the sort of legal problems with obtaining releases from the people who would be in those photos.
Well, let's say it's just you in that. I mean, there's these terms of service. At least as a lot of people read them, they seemed to be saying kind of exactly that we can use the images that go up here in ads. You don't have to know about it. We don't have to pay you. Wasn't that kind of, I mean, that was in simple.
Sure, but they'd still have to follow, the rest of the, American legal mechanics, right? And I think that
maybe when you check the box, the legal mechanics are done. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you can make an argument that that's an unconscionable term that a user would not necessarily expect, right? I mean, the Federal Trade Commission enforces the limited privacy law we have in this country right now, and it's basically, don't lie to them, don't be deceptive. But they've increasingly been saying that, look, if you're going to have, like, really onerous terms that people wouldn't expect, you have an obligation to put that, either at least in a privacy policy or maybe put it up front. I mean, it can be deceptive to not tell people what's going on. But I mean, also, I mean, if you take a picture of me drinking Coke and you put it on a billboard, even if I've signed away my rights, I mean, I think there are other legal prohibitions on that. I mean, it could be considered to be false advertising, right? I actually did not endorse Coke. I think there are enough other legal problems out there, apart from the issue we talked about before about not knowing if it really is my picture, if I've really signed away my rights.
Yeah.
That wasn't what they were doing.
I'm not legally informed enough to know. They may say, look, you're drinking Coke, aren't you? And is that you? Is that a Coke? Okay, you're up on the board. But to be fair here, again, Instagram, the co-founder, Kevin Systrom, saying in his blog post, it is not our intention to sell your photos. We'll see. A lot of people expect they might, or sort of wondering why people are so upset. Kay Cortez writes to us, says, myself, many musicians I know amazed that a generation that routinely steals digital content in the form of pirated MP3s and movies, many of which took years and hard-earned dollars to create, is suddenly so up in arms when a company who provides a free, all-caps, service now threatens to sell pictures of what you had for lunch. Musicians saying, yeah, come on, we worked hard to do ours, and now you're upset that they're selling your free stuff?
Of course, what kind of argument is that really against it? I mean, that just says there's this other bad that's vaguely related, and therefore this other bad should just go away. I mean, I think, you
in
know,
a time
a lot
of other bads, people wondered how to live, right?
Right. I mean, overall, I just think if the basic incentive structure that these social networks have right now is to gather up as many users as they possibly can and as much data as they possibly can and then sell the most invasive advertising that they possibly can. And that's not necessarily bad, I guess, in a theoretical sense, but I do think that it contravenes what a lot of people expect is going to happen. And
now you're in the ad, maybe. Maybe your face is starring.
Right,
in the ad.
That's right. And I think, what that means is to think through some of the other monetization models that could exist for a service like this. I mean, mm-hmm. There could be the sort of pro upsells, like you want other filters, you want other things. There could be the lottery system that we heard
right.
about before. I mean, there's got to be other ways that tend to align the incentives of users to a reasonable amount of privacy and a reasonable amount of publicity with the company's goals, which is making some money. I mean, particularly because startup rhetoric always begins, all we care about is what's good for our users. All we care about is what's mm-hmm. good for our users. I mean, mm-hmm. how many times have we heard that from Twitter, Facebook, Google? I mean, every single consumer internet company will tell you that until they have to make money and it sort of comes up against what they'd like to do. And then they say, well, in the end, it's somehow still good for you that we're doing this thing that you don't want. Which completely contradicts what they've been saying during their growth phase.
But they're in a different phase. Joe in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
The terms of service for Instagram are consistent with that for Facebook. They say that they own your content and grant you a license to use it, and any time they can revoke that and use force of law against you for using your own content. I honestly don't mind them selling my content to their profit, but I strongly disagree that they own it.
The ownership issue, I mean, again, we're waiting for all this to get clarified with Instagram, but as you, I mean, you're pointing right at it. Facebook owns Instagram. Joe, is it reasonable to expect something different from Instagram?
I expect they're going to be exactly the same. I don't use Facebook because I disagree with the terms of service. I disagree that they own my content.
Alexis, what about it? I mean, many people look at Instagram and see it as kind of like Twitter, but with photos. But when people tweet, I don't know, do they think they're going to own the words that they put up there forever? Are photos different?
Right. I do think that there's an intimacy to photos and specifically to Instagram photos. I mean, it's hard to sort of pin down the magic of like how a service does exactly what it does. But I do think that they sold themselves and were seen by many people as a sort of more intimate, more private version of Facebook. You know, it was a place where you could build a small network of people that you wouldn't mind showing pictures of, like, you know, Christmas morning.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons when they got bought by Facebook, a lot of people are like, oh, no. Mm-hmm. Like, now we're going to be sort of experiencing the sort of more invasive data grabs that we've seen on the Facebook side. And in fairness to all of these companies, right, I mean, these privacy norms are, in fact, just that, right? I mean, we have ideas about privacy that exist in the sort of collective culture. And their point is that, hey, you know, if we make these moves and no one says anything and no one leaves the service, then actually the norm has moved and we can do it. And that's all people expect. And I think that's, again, that's why it's important to try and apply political pressure to these companies when they make moves like this.
Well, they certainly have leverage on their side. Once you've got a lot of your stuff up there, maybe the politics are the opposite leverage. Steve in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Steve, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Tom, your first guest, Richie Hernandez, said that he thought that a lot of the Instagram users didn't do a lot of thinking before they got so upset. It's my impression that the kind of people who use YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram don't do a lot of thinking, period.
the kind of people? It's 100 million people.
Well, that speaks pretty poorly for our nation. If this is what they're using their time doing... And I don't have a lot of sympathy for them because, as another caller said, they are effectively stealing movies, music, news reports.
Well, but, you know, Steve, I mean, I don't know. People have always put photo albums together. We didn't laugh at that. People understood that very well. Instagram's a kind of a live photo album. It doesn't seem outside of anybody's comprehension. It's a way of sharing what you're doing in your life. I mean, is it
right,
really?
But when you, if we have people who have been to college – and then they put something on the internet, and then all of a sudden they say to themselves, "Oh my gosh, I don't have privacy. I don't. This is my private property."
Well, what if this is their new photo album? I mean, if, in the old days, if you had a nice Kodak album tucked away in the chest of drawers, and somebody came in and ripped out photos and, you know, put them in a magazine, you might feel abused.
Right. Well, no, I wouldn't, because the internet is giving these people a gigantic platform. It's giving them a Times Square size billboard, at which they are utilizing, and they want it for free, and they want their privacy, and they want their private property, and then, you know, it's all gimme, 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 and I don't have a lot of sympathy for it, Tom.
We've got it. I mean, here we are. We're back to Gizmodo's stop whining about your data, you little whiny baby perspective. I just go back and forth here, Alexis, because, I mean, I get what Steve is saying. Everybody's saying you put it online. What do you expect? On the other hand, we have had norms around privacy, and norms deserve some kind of respect too?
Right. I mean, let's stipulate that some people who use the internet are dumb. Okay, fine. But there's the other several hundred million people who are on the internet.
Yeah.
There's also, you know, there's got to be an idea of gradations of privacy, right? I mean, it is to the business interests of Facebook, Google, Instagram, Twitter to be able to give us the ability to share with some people, but not everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something that they need to be able to do, right? And mm-hmm. so it's actually fascinating that one of the responses to them trying to sort of get more data out of us is for many people to say, hey, anything that's on the internet is wide open, because really we're trying to create these different kinds of spaces, and it doesn't have to be this extreme. It's either not on the internet or it's completely open for everyone always forever. I mean, that has got to be one of the things that we start building into the architecture of these services. I mean, I have
and maybe the law around these services, because
that's
their
right.
interest is in, I mean, here's Jeff Chester says, Facebook wants a frictionless system to collect as much information and likeness says as possible. Just frictionless.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a friend now who used to work at Twitter who has a script that he runs that goes back after 24 hours and deletes anything he tweeted that day. I mean, I think should we get to that level of sort of consciousness about the longevity of the information that we're putting out there? Maybe not, but it's an interesting signal from people who have been really close to these services about how exactly they should be using
their data.
Yeah,
I was reading about the new one, Snapchat with the image disappears after a certain time. Frida in Providence, Rhode Island. Frida, thanks. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Tom. I am a student in Providence, and there's a really vibrant startup culture here, so I know a lot of kind of, you know, young 20-somethings who definitely have that feeling of, you know, what's best for our users. But I'm also coming out of a semester with Cornelia Dean, the New York Times science writer.
Okay.
She's teaching a class on media and communications, and I'm really interested when we talked about legal battles in the U.S., a lot of our legislation comes from kind of post-facto cases going to the Supreme Court.
Right. Something gets done, and it ends up in court, and it gets decided. What do you think is coming, Frida?
So, I mean, I'm wondering, I was really intrigued by the kind of issue of being forgotten in Europe, and I'm wondering if you or Alexis thinks that there's any hope for the U.S. to kind of pass progressive legislation for people to be able to be forgotten, or if you think this is something that's ultimately going to have to be legislated by the Supreme Court in Washington.
So proactive with law in advance or the Supreme Court ultimately. Justin, what do you think? What do you see coming?
I mean, Supreme Court, probably not. There's not a lot of common law or constitutional reservations of commercial privacy rights. Now, there are.
Personal privacy rights are a huge deal with the Supreme Court historically.
Yes, but vis-a-vis the government, not vis-a-vis Facebook.
Okay.
Now, there actually was a really good Supreme Court case last term that may, you know, shed some light on this. A guy named Jones with a drug dealer driving around town, all in public, all perfectly observable, and the police put a tracker on his car and observed him for over a month.
Yep.
And the Supreme Court said, well, yeah, you're out in public all that time. Yes, it's observable, but no one reasonably expects that every single thing they do outdoors is going to be monitored all the time. That really violates his reasonable expectation of privacy, even though he was in public. And they said that was a Fourth Amendment search of him. So, you know, maybe there is this kind of growing recognition that, yes, things can be detected, but we still retain some basic privacy rights in the information we do, you know, online and offline.
Alexis, legislation, court decision down the road, or Wild West all the way? What do you think?
State legislation, and then people eventually resolve it at the federal level.
State legislation. California, where you are?
I don't know. I think people all over the country in all kinds of different states are worried about what's happening with their data online.
Well, it's been the week of Instagram and pitchforks. We'll see where all that goes. Alexis Madrigal with The Atlantic, overseeing the technology channel there. Alexis, thank you so much for joining us today. Just great to have you.
Thank you, sir.
And Justin Brookman at the Center for Democracy. Justin, thanks to you as well.
Thanks for having me on.
In this hour tomorrow, we will look back to the massacre in Connecticut and forward in the sacred season. A little spiritual guidance maybe right here. Join us. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.